Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Columbus has a brand new congressional district, the 3rd congressional district, a Democrat-leaning swath of Columbus area, central Ohio, with 4 Democrats asking primary voters to make them the candidate in the November general election. We've already interviewed on Monday Mary Jo Kilroy and on Tuesday Priscilla Tyson, and tomorrow we will interview Ted Celeste. Today, Joyce Beatty. This week we'll interview each of them for 20 minutes. Today, first let's hear the first television ad in this truncated election cycle that put forth by Joyce Beatty.
This is no time to go along to get along.
Joyce Beatty.
Not while jobs are going to China and India. I will stand up to anyone, especially the Tea Party, when they try to dismantle Social Security and Medicare. It's time for a new voice in Congress to get results.
Joyce Beatty for Congress.
I'm Joyce Beatty, and I approve this message.
Joyce Beatty, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
That other voice in there, Mayor Mike Coleman.
Yes, it is.
You make it pretty clear in your television ad, in that one, you have a new one out, that you aren't going to go along to get along. Does that mean that you're not interested in compromise?
No, it means just the opposite. It means that I'm not just going to go along with something because one group or one person says that we should do this. I'm a consensus builder, and it is about compromise. So often we have people who just go along with it versus having that open door, talking to new and different people, because it's a new day, and the not going along to get along goes in with the new voice, that it's important to me to talk to everyone. I call it buckets. I'm not a one bucket kind of person. So I have multiple buckets because this district is so diverse.
My guest, once again, Joyce Beatty. She's one of the 4 candidates in the Democratic primary election for Ohio's 3rd congressional district. If you have a question or comment for Joyce Beatty, we welcome them. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Joyce will be with us for 10 more minutes. Just make sure you tell our screener if you support Joyce or if you oppose Joyce, or neither. You also mention in this ad the Tea Party by name, and in terms of Social Security and Medicare. Is that what you see as the biggest threat, as your number one issue if you're elected?
I do. I see it as an important issue for people in general in Columbus, Ohio, and in central Ohio. And I think when you look at a program that provides the social insurance that Medicare does and Social Security does to the millions of people across the United States, but right here at home, we don't make statements without talking to people and without finding out what their needs are. And one of the fears when you look at the population of individuals in central Ohio is they are very concerned about Medicare, Social Security, and obviously employment and jobs. So when you hear my focus, it's concentrated on priority areas. Are there other areas? Absolutely. But the message must be about protecting our seniors. And oftentimes people don't realize, when you look at what's happened since 1965 at the beginning of Medicare, and how over the years in 1972 and in early 2000, that those individuals who are disabled and under the age of 65 are included in Medicare. So it's the elderly, it's those who are disabled, and if I don't fight for them, then who?
The reason why they're worried about those programs is, as they stand, they don't appear to be, as the equation was worked out, sustainable over time. As the baby boomer generation ages and outnumbers the younger generations left behind to support Social Security and Medicare, how do you think those programs should be funded to adequately support this larger constituency than back in 1965?
Sure, Ann. And while I recognize the issue that it comes back to funding, I don't think you throw out something like that that's needed without a plan or without actions. And I stand on issues like that. While I'm always going to have an opening ear, I will not say just because we have A, we have to throw out the whole program. So what is it going to require? The compromise, the consensus building, working with others to figure out where the trade-offs are. And so for me, it's easy. Those are, when you look at government, and this is what's so complex about going to the federal level. That's a mandatory service. And certainly, as you know, when you look at the federal budgets and guidelines, they're mandatory services and they're discretionary services. So for me, to start cutting or doing away with a mandatory before you look at some of the discretionary services. So it's kind of like what you do when you're balancing anything. There's a lot of give and take. So I am open to working with colleagues in Congress, but bringing new ideas about how we do those trade-offs to save Medicare and Social Security.
Bob in Columbus, welcome to the show. You're on the air with Joyce Beatty.
Good morning. I want to ask Mrs. Beatty, what is her position on the Ohio State University wanting to tear down the neighborhood around Poindexter Village, which is in her previous state representative district?
Let me answer that question that I think it is the Columbus Metropolitan Housing is faced with some of the federal issues that came up that they're looking at changing how we house those individuals who live in public housing. There's been a huge relocation plan that came out of the federal government that was passed down, and I think CMHA has done an incredible job of balancing it. Here's what I think. When you look at something that's as historic as Poindexter Village, I think you save some of the history. I don't think that it is fair, regardless of where something is located, that you have people living in places that are outdated, that need renovation or needs a total overhaul. So I think our concern should be, what happens to the individuals there? How are they relocated? And let me give you a perfect example that's parallel to that. The Jenkins, 1100 East Broad, very historic with Jenkins, very similar to Poindexter. I was one of the strongest advocates initially about being afraid of tearing the building down. And then someone said, you have African American and folks of a lesser income living in conditions that are somewhat substandard. And that convinced me that we needed to do two things, save the history, tear down Jenkins, rebuild it, and bring those same folks back in a state-of-art facility. And we were able to do that. I think that we should listen to the community's concerns, but I think we should make sure that we don't get in the way of providing a better housing for our folks living in Poindexter.
Bob, thanks for the call. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you'd like to speak with Joyce Beatty. She's my guest right now. She's part of a series of interviews I'm doing this week with the four candidates in the Democratic primary for the 3rd Congressional District, the brand new district. If you win this primary and are elected in November, you'll be in the minority party in Washington. What lessons do you take from your 2 years as minority leader of the Ohio House, the first female Democratic minority leader in the history of Ohio, by the way? What lessons do you take from that experience with you to Washington?
I think I have a lot of lessons that I can take. I was able to serve on the powerful Finance Committee. I was able to also work with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle to get things done. I think that it is somewhat not only historic, but it gives me the leadership and the experience that I was able to go to the House of Representatives and have 39 members and to be able to deliver the majority. So it says to me, if you understand complex issues, keep in mind we had to balance a $56 billion budget. When I first went to the House, we also had a separate education budget, a $12 billion budget. So when I look at the number of things that I was able to do, I think those are the same kinds of things because many of them had federal implications, but I was able to be in the minority and leaving the Democrats in the majority. So I'm excited about the opportunity to go to Washington and take new ideas. I think it's so important to be a new voice. I was a new voice at the State House, doing things that had not happened before, being strong, being tough, but holding a state of the district where people could come and share with me their ideas. And then I would take those ideas back to the State House and put them into the formula for what was good for the district. I want to be able to do that same thing when I go to Washington. The devil's in the details, and I'm proud to say that I have a lot of scholarship. I like reading. I like studying the information and putting strategies together.
When you talk about bringing a new voice to Washington, it seems like you're contrasting yourself to Mary Jo Kilroy, who's the only former member of Congress among the four vying for this the Democratic primary nomination. All four of you know each other.
Yes.
What's it like running so closely together? And, of course, you and Priscilla Tyson are both African-American. The African-American community could be split over this when it comes to voting day. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think you're right. First, let me say we all are Democrats. We all have worked together. So I think it gives the people a choice. But let me take your question and answer the three parts of it. First, I'm very pleased that when I decided to get in the race, as you mentioned, being African American, almost 30% of the district is African American. The district is heavily Democrat, but parts of the African American community came together with a large, diverse group of folks, a panel of 20. And they vetted African-American candidates. And I was so pleased as we sat in the room that we were going to have an African-American out of the eight of us, all past elected officials. And when those 20 diverse folks picked me, it was an honor. When the mayor endorsed me, it was an honor. Over 70 ministers and pastors from this community. So I think it speaks to the voice that's new. That's history we're trying to make. It's a new voice. As you know, in the state of Ohio, seventh largest state, we only have one African-American person serving in Congress from Cleveland, and that's all we've ever had. So that's a new voice for us. When you look at all four of us running, we give the people options. I happen to think that I'm the best option. I'm the only one who has also served with our other two counterparts who are in Washington. And I think you have to also look at what's good for the community. I am balanced. I have a core belief. I'm a Democrat, and I'm proud of all those things. But I also know to get things done, you have to work with other folks as well.
Todd in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Todd.
I've read your platform a bit, and I just want to know what you're going to do for small businesses to grow and create jobs. Everybody's talking about jobs here. And, you know, as someone who's a small business owner, I want to know what you're going to do for small businesses.
Let me tell you, I think that's an outstanding question, because what you may not know is I'm a small business owner, started out about 18 years ago or a little more, with my own company. Now I have a downtown boutique that's been there for 8 years, so I know what it's like to make a payroll. I know what it's like to have to pay the cat tax. So one of the things I've been looking at, going through federal legislation, looking at what I can do. So one of the things I would like to do is serve on the Small Business Committee. That's the committee I would advocate to be on, so I could take my experience in the needs of small businesses, looking at the dollars that President Obama and other members of Congress have put into small business loans. More than $20 million has been appropriated. Sometimes we don't know what's there, but having someone who understands how much we need to help small businesses, I think I am the best person to go and do that. Because when you look at Central Ohio and you look up at the makeup of folks like you and me who spur the economy as small business owners, I think that we need to make sure that there is that new voice there that speaks up for small businesses, figures out how to bring federal dollars back in this community to make small business owners aware of it.
Todd, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. We are out of time.
Oh, this was so much fun, Anne.
Time flies when you're having fun. Joyce Beatty, candidate for Ohio's 3rd Congressional District. She's one of four Democrats running in the Democratic primary for that job. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
When we come back, we're going to talk about the freedom to marry in the state of Ohio and across the country. Stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and you can listen to our station anytime by streaming on the web. Just visit WOSU.org and click on the Listen Now button at the top of the page. Listen to local and national news from your computer or mobile device. You can also listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher or watch our video stream. Just visit WOSU.org.
Support for 89.7 comes from Outlook Media, publishers of Outlook Columbus, High Street Neighborhoods, hosts of Network Columbus, and creators of Go High, serving the progressive, urban, and gay communities for over 15 years. OutlookMedia.com.
42 degrees in downtown Columbus, partly sunny skies today and a high of 53. Rain showers are likely tonight, a low of 38 degrees. There is a chance of rain on Thursday, a high back up to 53. And showers and thunderstorms are possible Thursday night with a low of 40 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us.
In 2004, voters approved a constitutional ban on gay marriage in Ohio. Proponents of gay marriage want to put it on the Ohio ballot again in November. Times have changed since voters overwhelmingly approved the ban 8 years ago, according to Ian James, who is leading the petition drive in Ohio as part of a nationwide coalition, Freedom to Marry. He talked to Ohio Public Radio's Bill Cohen last week.
We will absolutely get this on the ballot. Our volunteer base has grown 11 people every hour on average. We started out with a handful. Yesterday we had 100. At the end of the day we had 200. This morning we have 500. The energy is behind this issue. We have gay and straight allies. There are leaders of all stripes coming on board. This is a broad-based effort, and it's going to make it to the ballot.
Coming up, we'll hear from Ed Mullen of Equality Ohio, the group leading the pro-gay marriage effort in Ohio. And we'll hear from John Eastman of the National Organization for Marriage. It's the national group working to oppose gay marriage in the United States and in the states and across the nation. Right now, we welcome to the show David Mashey. David is a senior researcher with the Pew Center's Forum on Religion and Public Life. Welcome to the show, David.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
Question for listeners. Do you think voters will overturn the constitutional ban on gay marriage if it goes on the ballot in November? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. Tell the screener if you're for or against the issue. Thank you. David Mashey, the latest polling on this, the issue of same-sex marriage by the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press in October, found the public divided almost evenly on the issue?
Right, they did. The latest poll that we have shows 45% in favor of same-sex marriage and 46% opposed. So it's very, very evenly divided, and that represents a very big change from say 10 years ago when we had about 57-58% opposed and 35% in favor. So we've gone from a very solid majority opposed to same-sex marriage over 10 years ago to as you say, a very evenly divided country on the issue.
There's about 9 percentage points in there. How squishy are those? The people, do they not know, or do they not know enough about the issue? What about them?
Yeah, I mean, some people don't have an opinion about the issue. Some people haven't been following it. So we get a lot of that sort of thing, especially on these sorts of questions. So, yeah, there's a slice of the American population that's just either unwilling to answer the question. And usually when we ask questions, the polls that we do, are 15, 20 minutes long. And so we ask a lot of questions, or they just don't know enough about it to feel confident answering it.
So the public's more supportive overall, and support has increased steeply in recent years. Is that across the board or among specific groups?
Well, what we have found is that when you break this down and look at it, say, by age, we see very, very big differences. older Americans are still largely opposed to same-sex marriage, senior citizens, for example, and even baby boomers, people in their late 40s, 50s, 60s, are opposed, pretty solidly opposed. The most recent poll we did showed that 32% of people born before 1945 are opposed, are in favor. So that's a pretty small minority. 37% of baby boomers are in favor. Again, a pretty small minority there. But as you bring, as you look at younger age cohorts, millennials, people born after 1980, let's say, two-thirds of millennials, younger people, people in their 20s, let's say, are in favor of same-sex marriage. And, you know, people born, let's say, after 1965, between 65 and 80, they're pretty evenly divided. About 46% of those folks are in favor of same-sex marriage. So.
Outside of the age issue, are there other demographic breakdowns among, that are significant, between religions, among religions, ethnic subgroups?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at this issue by religion, there are some very, very clear divides. White evangelical Protestants are, by and large, are largely opposed to same-sex marriage. The last poll that we did, and it's been pretty consistent through the last 10 years of polling that we've done, the last poll that we did showed that about 12% of white evangelical Protestants oppose same-sex marriage. African-American Protestants also quite opposed to same-sex marriage. 32% right now, again, in the last poll that we did, are in favor. So, again, a pretty small minority. Catholics and white mainline Protestants used to be opposed, pretty solidly opposed. They have brought those numbers have actually ticked up quite a bit. So the last numbers that we have for Catholics show that 54% of Catholics are now in favor of same-sex marriage, and 53% of white mainline Protestants, and when I say that, I mean Methodists, Presbyterians, Episcopalians, non-evangelical Protestants, are now in favor of same-sex marriage. Finally, a group that has always, at least since we've done polling, been in favor of same-sex marriage are those who are unaffiliated. And that's a very large number, a sort of diverse group of people. It can range from people who think of themselves as Christians but just don't go to a particular church, all the way to people who are atheists or agnostic. A lot of those people might be sort of self-identify themselves as spiritual but not religious. But anyway, that group has pretty much always been in favor of same-sex marriage, again, as long as we've been conducting these polls. And the last poll that we have shows that about two-thirds of them, 66%, favor same-sex marriage.
My guest is David Mashey. He's a senior researcher with Pew Center's Forum on Religion and Public Life. I'm asking our listeners out there what your prediction is in November if it gets on the ballot again. Would it pass this time? 2004 voters approved a constitutional amendment that banned gay marriage in the state of Ohio. Do you think if it went back on the ballot, they would do that again? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. They just approved it in the New Jersey legislature. Of course, Governor Chris Christie vetoed it, but they did approve it in the legislature, and then Maryland, I think, just approved it, and I think it's supposed to be the governor's supposed to sign it there. They just approved it in Washington. The governor signed it there.
Right.
So how does the approval of gay marriage in one state tend to impact polling across the country? Does it affect it? Do we see increases or decreases of support or no change at all? Do you have a sense about that, how it affects public opinion across the country?
Yeah, we don't really have a sense of that. I mean, one could certainly make the argument that when you see the issue winning one side of the issue winning in state legislatures or at the ballot box, that might make people reconsider, but we just don't know. What we do know, as I mentioned at the very beginning of our conversation, is that there's clearly been a a serious uptick in support for this over time. Whether that support will continue or not, you know, we just don't know. There are some signs that it might. When we talked earlier about age groups, you know, it does seem that, you know, when the people who are most opposed to same-sex marriage are also the people who are fading, you know, away. They're passing away. These are people in their 80s and 70s. So the cohort, the age cohort most opposed to same-sex marriage is shrinking, whereas, of course, younger people are now much more in favor of it than people who are older. That's a group that's growing. So that would point to you know, same-sex marriage, support for same-sex marriage continuing to grow. On the other hand, some people have pointed out quite correctly that there was an assumption in the 1970s after the Roe v. Wade abortion decision that public opinion would swing very much in favor of abortion rights and continue to grow in that direction. It did swing in favor of abortion rights, but it didn't grow after a while. And in fact, we've seen in recent years an uptick of opinion of the sort of pro-life camp, you know, people who are opposed to abortion. That number has actually grown a little bit in recent years. So it's hard to really predict the future, and we have to be a little careful and humble when we talk about it.
Is the gay marriage issue, is that something that people tend to change their minds on once they've come to the point where they say, now I think it's okay? Maybe they didn't know, or they were opposed to it, they've changed their mind. Will they flip-flop? Or, like, I have met people, just anecdotally, who used to support abortion rights and now oppose it. Now they call themselves pro-life. Do people move around on these issues that much, that often?
You know, it's hard to know. We don't actually test for that.
Okay.
And so it's hard to know whether people actually do make those sorts of changes. You know, we have tested for some things, and we've looked at people's views on religion and their own sort of religious beliefs, and we've asked people about that, the changes there. And we see quite a bit of change, and that's a very different thing. It's a very different kettle of fish, obviously. You know, obviously we've seen a substantial number of people who were opposed to same-sex marriage now say that they're for it. But whether we've seen people, let's say, who at one point were in favor of it, turn around and say that they're now against it, we just don't have any evidence of that one way or another.
Mike in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You're talking with Dave Mashey. He's a senior researcher with Pew Center Forum on Religion and Public Life. Welcome.
Thank you. I am definitely in favor of gay marriage, and I would actually hope that the Ohio law would be found unconstitutional because of the Supreme Court when they rule on the California law. But my real point right now is that I'm concerned about putting it on the ballot, that it has the wrong effect. In 2004, it influenced the election. It energized President Bush's base and might have gotten him elected. And it might have the same effect in 2012 of energizing the base that would influence the election in a way that I might not like.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Dave Mashey, any evidence on that score?
Yeah, there actually is. I mean, there's Mike is actually right. In 2004, there's some evidence that the fact that the same-sex marriage amendment was on Ohio's ballot probably brought more social conservative voters out, most of whom probably supported President Bush at the time in his efforts to be reelected. Also, President Bush won a substantially larger percentage of the African American vote in Ohio than he did nationally. I think he won about 16% of the African American vote in Ohio, which doesn't sound like a lot, but when the president, I think, won about 9% of the African American vote nationally. It is believed that the reason he did was because a lot of socially conservative African Americans came out and voted, you know, for President Bush on this issue, or at least partly on this issue. So, you know, Mike makes a very good point. And, of course, Ohio is, as we know, a very, very key swing state. At least it has been in past elections. So, and yes, some people have actually made the claim that Mike has made, that that gay marriage may have put President Bush over the top in Ohio. And, of course, putting him over the top in Ohio put him over the top in the Electoral College. So, yes, he makes a very interesting point.
Thanks a lot, Mike, for that call. We appreciate it. Greg in Whitehall. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Hey, welcome. I'm going to make it quick. I know you have a lot of callers. I am totally against it.
Okay.
And one of the biggest reasons being, if you allow gay marriage, you have to allow them certain rights.
Okay, but I wanted to know what listeners thought about whether or not and what its chances were on the ballot in November. What do you think about that? Outside of the fact that you have...
And a close vote.
You think it's going to be closer than in 2004, then?
Correct. I think it will be because of turnout.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Greg. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Take care. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I want to hear what listeners think about what kind of chance the pro-gay marriage issue has on the ballot in November. You can also email, or you can also go to our All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there. How big of a deal is this, David Mashey, as far as polling on this? It's been since October. To what extent do however many states are grappling with the issue inspire a place like Pew Center's Forum on Religion and Public Life to poll on it and learn more? How fast is this changing?
Well, I mean, it's certainly something that we keep our eyes on, and actually, I am told that it is that same-sex marriage is consistently among the most popular parts of our website, pewforum.org, where we present all of the data for free that we produce. People are extremely interested in it. I think on both sides are very interested in it. So as far as, and I don't know whether you were asking this at the beginning of the question, as far as how interested voters are, and I don't know whether that's something you want to get into a little bit, but sure. We haven't seen a lot of evidence so far that voters are making this a priority. Earlier, a month or so back, the Pew Research Center did a poll on voter priorities, and same-sex marriage did not rate in the top 20. Instead, it was the sort of thing that you might expect. The economy, jobs, taxes, health care, terrorism was still there, education, these sorts of bread-and-butter issues, mostly bread-and-butter issues, are very much at the top of voters' agendas. The only thing that even made the top 20 was, I think, something called a decline in moral values that could, depending on your perspective, include same-sex marriage, but it could also mean, people's views on what's been going on Wall Street, for example, or other things. Mm-hmm. So it's a very broad category that could include a lot of different things, depending on a person's perspective. So same-sex marriage really hasn't been that big an issue in voters' minds. It was a bigger issue, at least so far, as we know, in this election cycle. It was a bigger issue in 2004 when your state voted on it. And I think one of the big reasons why it was a big issue in the presidential campaign that year was because Massachusetts the year before had become the first state to legalize same-sex marriage. And I think that caught a lot of people off guard. I think it surprised a lot of people. And so I don't think that's happening in the same way now, even though states like, as you point out, Washington and probably Maryland very soon are legalizing it, it's become much more common. So,
well, David Mashey, we've run out of time. I want to thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Ann. It was my pleasure.
David Mashey, he's a senior researcher with Pew Center's Forum on Religion and Public Life. Coming up, we'll hear from two different points of view on the gay marriage issue. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Many 89.7 NPR News members have discovered the advantages of using the WOSU member card for two-for-one dining, cultural events, and family activities. Now there are additional benefits with the member card benefit of the month. The benefit for February is the Columbus Museum of Art. Enjoy two-for-one admission all month long. Become a basic $60 member and get your member card by going to WOSU.org now.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides begins with the voices of Ohio's African Americans. That is with the AARP. Join us for Hour 2 of All Sides at 11.
Support for 89.7 comes from the estate of Donald R. Glancy, whose life was enriched by public radio and television, and whose bequest seeks to encourage others to support WOSU. More on Leaving a Legacy at 292-9678.
42 degrees in downtown Columbus, partly sunny skies today and a high of 53. Rain is likely tonight, a low of 38 degrees, and more rain expected on Thursday, a high back up to 53. Join us for a special election edition of Columbus on the Record, Friday night at 8:30 on WOSU-TV. The four contenders in the Democratic primary for Ohio's new 3rd Congressional District will face off. The debate will be moderated by WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson. Tune in for Columbus on the Record, a 3rd Congressional District primary debate. It's Friday night at 8:30 on WOSU-TV. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
In 2004, voters approved a constitutional ban on gay marriage in Ohio. Proponents of gay marriage want to put that back on the Ohio ballot again this November. They need to gather the signatures, qualified signatures, from 386,000 registered voters in Ohio to get it on the ballot. Joining us now to talk about that effort is Ed Mullen. He's executive director of Equality Ohio. Welcome to the show, Ed Mullen.
Thank you, Anne. It's great to be here.
Also with us by phone from California, I think, John Eastman, chairman of the board of the National Organization for Marriage. Welcome back to the show, John Eastman.
Thanks for having me back on, Ann.
If you want to give us a prediction out there in listener land, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I want to know whether you think that issue could pass this time. Ed Mullen, what was the tipping point for your organization? Why now? Why not even next year? Why 2012?
The petition drive is being started by a grassroots group. It's not driven by Equality Ohio. So there is an outpouring of support from the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community in Ohio, not just here in Columbus, but around the state, to get this issue on the ballot again, whether in 2012 or sometime soon. And we have put together a coalition, including Joyce Beatty, who was here with you earlier, Mayor Michael Coleman, Mary Jo Kilroy and Ted Celeste, as well as elected officials around the state who are supportive of this issue. And so I think the tipping point has been states like New York, Washington, Maryland passing laws that allow the freedom for same-sex couples to marry, and people in Ohio thinking that we should have the same rights that people in other states around the country have to have the love and commitment that we feel for our partners be recognized by the state.
Somebody earlier said their concern. They said they support gay marriage, but they're worried that putting it on the ballot this year could have a deleterious effect for Democrats in general.
Right. That's absolutely a consideration, and that's something that we've heard. I think 2012 is very different than 2004. We have candidates on the ballot running statewide like Sherrod Brown who are supportive of gay marriage and are very supportive of our efforts. And I think that the calculus is very different now when in the past you had a lot more people who are opposed to same-sex marriage, whereas today the polling is very different. And I think what's interesting about some of the polling is that it looks at the issue only of same-sex marriage. There's been some specific polling here in Ohio that talks about marriage, civil unions, and no relationship recognition at all. And when you add up the support for marriage and the support for civil unions, you have well over 60% of the people in the state who are supportive of that. So there are over 60% of the people in the state of Ohio who believe that there should be legal rights and responsibilities for same-sex relationships. And I think that's very different than the case in 2004. But as groups are looking at putting this on the ballot, how it impacts the ability for people who support gay rights to win election is definitely going to be a consideration.
John Eastman, your organization was created to fight these sorts of efforts state by state. Does it matter if the question before us is to overturn a constitutional amendment versus some other tactic to legalize same-sex marriage? The New Jersey legislature, for example, last week passed a same-sex marriage bill, but it was vetoed by the governor there. Does it matter?
Well, it does matter. What we find is as you get closer to the people in a direct vote, the support for transforming the institution of marriage is rather dramatic. The easiest route has been by courts to impose that transformation. The second route, which we've seen successful in a couple of recent instances here, New York and Washington, has been for the legislature to do that. Quite often, with certain legislators changing their vote from campaign promises that it explicitly made, and now coming into an election where they'll face the wrath of their voters, as we saw happen in the New York congressional district special election, for example. So in every place, the electorate overwhelmingly opposes this pretty dramatic transformation of what the institution of marriage means. And when you put it to a vote, the defense of traditional marriage has always won, and I expect it would in Ohio as well.
But do you disagree that it will probably be a lot closer than it was in 2004?
No, I don't disagree that it would be closer. There's been a huge campaign, call it propaganda or what have you, to treat this as just a question of equality rather than what it really is, which is a dramatic altering of what the institution means and has always meant.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org if you want to weigh in on whether you think that the ban on same-sex marriage in Ohio could be overturned in November. Derek in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Hey, yeah, I was calling about this the actual topic of the day. Personally, as an African-American male, I don't have a problem with, anybody can be with whoever they want to be. Mm-hmm. But what throws a lot of the black community off, well, I'm not going to say the whole black community, but a portion is when they actually try to equate being gay with being black. And, I just think that, that's the wrong way to go. I personally think that, all this is basically a ploy by both parties to get your mind off the real issues like the economy, because they want to feed into everybody's prejudices.
Well, now, Ed Mullen, you said it's a grassroots effort.
Absolutely. It's an effort that came out of the National Freedom to Marry's efforts to get mayors around the country involved in supporting same-sex marriage. And it has been volunteer. It's been folks all around the state going out and talking to their neighbors, talking to their friends about why marriage equality is so important for same-sex couples.
What about the point that – hang on a second, Derek. What about the point that Derek made about the people contrasting and comparing people who – LGBT community with people, of an ethnic background or African-American in particular?
Right. I don't think at all that the African-American struggle for civil rights in the United States is exactly the same as the struggle for LGBT civil rights in the country. I do think there are a lot of people who like to analogize to the civil rights effort and efforts to get the same types of laws relating to discrimination passed. But I don't think anyone thinks that the struggle is exactly the same. But you can learn a lot of lessons from the struggle. And one of those lessons is that the more people get to see interracial couples, the more people get to know and work with African Americans, the less likely they are to be prejudiced and the less likely they are to be discriminatory. And that's the same with people getting to know lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender people and see same-sex couples living in their communities.
Derek, thanks a lot for that call. Derek, I want to move on. We got a lot of callers, but I appreciate I appreciate it. John Eastman, backers of California's Proposition 8 are asking the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals to reconsider the recent ruling that found states' voter-approved ban on same-sex marriage is unconstitutional. What are your expectations on that score, given what is said to be a liberal-leaning court, liberal-leaning among the 25 full-time judges who will vote to rehear the case?
Well, yeah, and the Ninth Circuit has a very peculiar, unique process. Because the court is so large, they don't ever sit as the full court. En banc everywhere else in the country means the full court. So the full court will have a vote on whether to take it en banc, and then there will be a random selection of 11 judges out of the 25 who sit on that full court, and those 11 will form the en banc. And, of course, you can have, by luck of the draw, a more right-leaning or a more left-leaning panel than the court itself is. So there's a bit of a roll of the dice on what that panel will be. It nevertheless puts the existence of the panel decision on hold while the full court considers whether they're going to take the case. And that also stops the clock for petitioning the Supreme Court of the United States for review of the case.
Ed Mullen, is that a concern? Would it have been helpful to have the U.S. Supreme Court considering this issue as it goes to the ballot in November?
I think it's an issue that is ultimately going to get to the Supreme Court, and I think ultimately we're going to be happy on our side with the ruling that the Supreme Court comes down with. I think the ability of people to actually get married in California is something that would be very helpful to this effort, because the more couples there are that are getting married and you don't see the consequences that you hear other people talking about that would come from gay marriage, when you see that Massachusetts has had it for 8 years and all of the things that we were told would happen haven't actually happened, then that is helpful to our cause and helpful to overcoming the opposition.
And if I may, I'd like to go back to the, I think, an important point your caller made. And that is, you know, the analogy between the old race discrimination laws on marriage and the current laws. And his intuitive reaction to drawing that analogy, I think, was very insightful, that we recognize that the color of one's skin is completely irrelevant to some of the primary purposes of the institution of marriage, in a way that gender is highly relevant. If marriage is to have any continuing connection with procreation and the rearing of children by the biological parents that beget them, then that classification, that connection is highly relevant and, of course, passes Supreme Court standard tests for rational basis review.
Okay.
And to take that off of the table is what you need to do in order to say this violates the Equal Protection Clause. You end up with some rather extraordinary holdings by the courts. Judge Walker out here in California in the Prop 8 trial court said that procreation has never been part of the institution of marriage, and that gender is completely irrelevant. Those are astounding claims given what we know about the history of the institution of marriage.
Ed Mullen?
Marriage is really about love and commitment between two people. You have heterosexual marriages that do not result in procreation. You don't tell those people that they can't get married. And you have same-sex couples that are raising children, whether they're foster children, adopted children, or the biological children of one of the couples. So to equate procreation with heterosexual marriage is a false equation.
Let's see. Pam in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Pam.
Hi.
Hi, Pam.
My question was, in the earlier segment, you wanted to know if the voters would vote for it this time or it would be closer. I do think it's going to be closer, but the issue I wanted to talk about was the Ellen DeGeneres support from JCPenney's and how JCPenney's felt that they would stand behind Ellen DeGeneres, and the support that she received, Penny received on their Facebook pages, was overwhelmingly for Ellen DeGeneres and what she stood for as a human being, not as per se, not only being gay and standing up for her rights. And the other issue I wanted to bring...
We don't have enough time for two issues,
that's
Pam.
That's
I'm sorry,
fine.
But thanks.
Okay, that's okay. Uh-huh.
John Eastman, you want to respond to that?
Well, look, you know, I think it demonstrates that this is not about hostility to gays and lesbians. We're talking about altering the institution that has been so fundamentally important to civil society its primary purpose has been procreation. And yes, Ed, we don't you know conduct a witch hunt and you know give people a third degree about what are your plans for raising children. But it is a simple biological fact that men and women unassisted can have children in a way that other relationships do not. And fostering the purpose of that relationship, because that's how society perpetuates itself. And we know that raising children by the biological parents in a stable relationship is the, you know, provides the best path for success in life for those children. And so it's not anything in hostility toward gays and lesbians that would say we want to keep that institution for the purposes for which it was designed. And you see in these kind of things like the Ellen DeGeneres story, how people are more than happy to be charitable and accommodating where they can, but they're not going to allow you to fundamentally transform an institution on which society has derived so much benefit.
Okay. Thank you, Pam, for that call. I just wanted to take one more call before we go. Ian James, you're on the air. Yep. Welcome to the show. Introduce yourself, and we have about a minute and a half.
Thanks, Ann. Yes, Ian James. I'm with the Freedom to Marry Ohio Coalition and Committee. We're working on a constitutional amendment to allow for two consenting adults to have the freedom to marry, and also to protect religious institutions and give them the right to refuse to recognize or perform a marriage. And I think that's fundamentally different than what we've had the discussion about today.
Okay.
Because the discussion today has been about courts and voters injecting a ban. What this does actually is to allow voters to provide a freedom, a right.
Do you think... Okay. Is that distinction, you think that's going to make the difference at the ballot for most voters?
And yes, I do think that's going to make a big difference, because when we get down to it and we start talking about what two adults should have, consenting adults should have the right to do, the freedom they should have, and then also providing protections for religious institutions, mm-hmm. I think those are fundamentals that Ohio voters can wrap their heads around and actually can get behind. From a lot of different age groups and a lot of different demographic groups.
Right, and I think Ian is correct in saying that having the religious exemption spelled out very clearly in the way that the constitutional amendment is written is very important, because I think a lot of people who say that they're not supportive are not supportive on religious grounds, and having that exemption in there is really important.
John Eastman, last word, and thanks, Ian James, for that call. I appreciate it. 15 seconds.
I think the language demonstrates that what we're talking about here is changing this from an institution that was tied to procreation and making it an institution that is simply about adult relationships. That's a rather dramatic transformation, and I think it'll have profound societal consequences, and I think the voters of Ohio will recognize that when they go to the ballot box.
Thank you, John Eastman, and thanks, Ed Mullen. We appreciate it.